Hello, my name is Dan Brown, and I'm here today again with another A Lens a Day, conversations about information architecture. And today, it is my great pleasure to talk to the meticulous Darrell Rabinowitz. Darrell, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
I've been asking folks about process because I feel like IA, information architecture, is one of those things where people know we do it, and maybe we've talked about card sorting, but how we do it is maybe still a little bit of a mystery. Given the roles that you've had, I'm curious, how do you draw people into the IA process? How do you help people who may call themselves a UI designer or even a researcher? Kind of what activities, what exercises, what techniques can you use to kind of bring everyone in to collaborate on this stuff?
I've worked recently in very large companies with very large design teams collaborating with product and engineering. And often, because we're making apps more than anything, people aren't even thinking about information architecture whatsoever until they try to have their customers perform some sort of task. And in which case, that's when I kind of do more of a facilitation exercise to actually talk about your IA model, right? Are we a hub and spoke app? Are there other ways to get around? And I've had to do a lot of explaining that information architecture is about structure and not necessarily just what nav model we're doing, and it's not a hamburger menu. And so mostly it's around diagramming and literally I've had designers kind of just make some sort of visual that explains what we're talking about using boxes and arrows, and that brings on the conversation. But that's just to make people aware of what IA is, figuring out what kind of IA we need. I start with, what are we trying to accomplish? You know, how are our customers wayfinding, but also, especially because it's app-based, what tasks are we doing? And I start thinking through the task flows. We do a lot of customer journeys, and as well as even a service design blueprint to figure out all the different steps that helps us then figure out the model that we should kind of be thinking about. And in a separate note, there's the whole taxonomy issue and naming issue. We've done a lot of research around that, you know, like tree testing and of course card sorting and stuff like that. But I've worked at a lot of places where people have very specific opinions as to what we can call things. I know better than my customers do. And then there's a lot of legal issues in terms of what we call things as well. So taxonomy is usually the biggest contentious area, or one of them.
So you're validating one of my theories, which is that IA is sometimes, in some places, neglected, right? It's just not as people, they're not people dedicated to thinking about it, right. Unless you're someone like us who've sort of been there and thought about, have been thinking about IA for at least a little while and can kind of bring that to bear. I'm going to ask you to speculate, if that's okay. Where did it go? Why do you think it's gone? What about these large organizations makes it difficult for them to kind of have, let's call it, IA thinking on their teams?
You know, I hesitate to tell you how long I've been doing this, but there was a point where my title was IA, and I worked with a UI designer, and then roles sort of shifted to being interaction design, and IA kind of went away a little bit, at least in the orgs that I went into. And then we even got into product design, which kind of comboed it all into one. And I always find that really interesting, because as a leader, I like to have people who are generalists, who do a lot of different tasks, but I also like specialists. So I want a really strong visual designer who can really take that concept and make it really help us work, right? Call attention to the right thing. I want an interaction designer who can figure out how this thing is going to work. But what's missing has been the information architect. And typically it's the visual design of the interaction designer, as well as maybe my content strategist, who are working together to figure that kind of stuff out. And I also think because the apps that I work on were designed long ago and we're building on them, people think, oh, well, I don't really need to change this app, how it works necessarily. I'm just going to add things to it. And so the IA part is an addition. And it's only when we're really rethinking that we're like, wait a minute, is this right? Can we move through this in an intuitive way? And that's where I have to bring in the IA thinking.
Yeah, it's almost like when there's no one dedicated to thinking about it or empowered to think about it, they see the existing information architecture as almost a foregone conclusion, right? Like this is the way it is.
Of course we have a hamburger menu.
Right. So we're just these are the lines that we're going to draw on.
This is what we're going to build on. In fact, at one of my previous jobs, there was a question about having a global nav bar, and did we need to always be able to get to these places? And okay, now I'm really getting into navigation, and IA is much more than that. But I had to actually explain the concept of global and local navigation, and people didn't even understand that.
Have you ever seen a light bulb go off on your team? Like, is there? I'm just sort of curious, like with designers who may be newer in the field, and you're sort of facilitating this conversation about navigation or structure or concept models or content models, whatever it might be. Is there a moment where you've seen that light bulb go off, where it kind of clicks for them? Like, wait a minute, there's an underlying structure that we need to affect as well.
Yes. Yes. In fact, I did have a very senior designer just create a very simple boxes diagram of a screen. So for all of the landing screens, this is how she was going to block out the information. And so all the different landing screens that we had could be use this model. And everyone in the team was like, oh my gosh, this makes so much sense. And I am like, yeah, it does, doesn't it? It helps to think through the structure at every level. And then we talk a lot about the skim, dip, dive. That's what a lot of places look at. So what's at the highest level that you skim? How do you dip in? And is there a deep dive? And how do you get back and forth and around?
What? I've not heard skim,
what dip, levels? And dive. What's a skim? What do you skim at the high level? What do you dip into? And what is a dive?
Wow.
Yeah. I hadn't heard it before either, but now
it's a thing.
Now it's a thing.
Are there kind of your favorite moments of the IA process? Is there sort of one aspect of doing IA that you still sort of get excited about?
I still get excited about that, the concept model part of it. I'm like, if you could diagram and just kind of explain how this is working, I get all excited. I'm like, I'm a very visual person. It can be a rough on a whiteboard. I did once. Okay. So I had somebody I worked with who was more senior drew a square and a circle on a board. And she was like, this is what I'm thinking. A square is what I'm thinking about, and I'm describing it to you. And you're thinking that it's a circle because we're not looking at visuals. And that was a moment for me where I realized I had to, if you're only speaking in a language and you're not using the visuals to communicate, people might misunderstand you.
Right.
I feel like IA can help with the understanding when we diagram it out in whatever way it is. And it doesn't have to be a wireframe. I am always asking people to model a flow and not to dive into high fidelity mocks. you know, but if you can just like make a pretty picture for me, I'm really happy.
I mean, it's almost, it's, I like the skim dip dive, but it does miss the, you know, it assumes there's sort of one direction, right? Yes. That we are, that we need to think about the content, not that the user is going, but that our means for assessing and understanding a content structure is these kind of, this layer cake approach.
And so that's what brought up the IA discussion with my team, that, wait a minute, if we're only skim dip diving, we're only jumping down and back. We're not jumping across. We're not thinking about at the skim level, I want to look at five different things. We're not thinking about the relationships between the content or screens or tasks. And so the IA helps you think about all those things.
That was amazing. I think the other thing that, I mean, my aspiration, let me say it like this, for information architecture is, as you say, it's not just navigation, right? It's sort of this multi-faceted approach for looking at structures. And one of the because people neglect structure, I think we're also neglecting to understand the human side of these things as well. That even if a structure is somewhat invisible or only represented by labels, that we're asking people, our users, to in a sense see themselves in that structure, which is my clumsy way of sort of bringing us to the lens that we're talking about. And I wonder if you could say what the lens is and maybe describe it in your own words. Would that be okay?
Sure. So the lens is vulnerability. I apparently can't pronounce it. And it's basically how we can use information architecture to make people feel safe and help build trust. You know, I think that I have personally, because I've worked on so much financial services, we have to ask for a lot of personal information for people. And how can we make people feel comfortable in giving us their personal information? I think that we, you know, look how much of our privacy all over the place is being taken from us, and we don't even know what information about us everyone knows, right? Especially around social media and stuff like that. But like, if you are signing up to use some of the services I've worked on, I need your social. How do I make you feel safe to give me your social, basically?
So can you talk to us a little bit about how you might dig into that problem? What is some of the maybe user research that you might do, or collaborative exercises you might do with the team to kind of tease out some of that stuff?
You know, so obviously for people to feel safe, you have to do contextual interviewing. I mean, I think I've been lucky enough to work with really top user researchers who start with more generative research. At PayPal, we talked a lot about, how do I feel about finances? How do I feel about money? And just those big pictures, you know, people form opinions about money when they're very, very young. They keep it close to the vest. And so we start with that so that we understand people's attitudes towards the bigger issues. And then more contextual interviews. So I had people sign up for all sorts of money sending services, not just PayPal. And we look at the sign up process and where are we asking you to do what, at what point? And there was lots of discussion. I actually did at PayPal, I held a number of design sprints with a lot of cross-functional people, including our legal and compliance, where we created flows and tried to think about what is the point where, what is the point where it's critical to get that information and they can't, we need that information before we can move forward, but that there people aren't going to back off. And there was a lot about, one of the things we really worked on was the language we use and how we make people trust so that they feel okay in giving us that critical information. And at one point people wanted like right away that we wanted to like say, you're signing up, give me your name, your address, your social, your stuff, boom, and you're done and it'll be done. And we were like, we're gonna lose everybody. So we literally tested, you know, there was lots of testing. So we made a flow where we asked for information upfront. We made a flow where only when you're about to do that task where we needed that information, we asked for it. And we asked for it once and we told you. And then we fought with everybody, including our legal people, over the amount of disclosures that we had to show and all the legal things. So, and what was really interesting, I know I'm going on about this, but we made an assumption that people didn't want to know why we were asking for this information. We made an assumption that that if we said PayPal wanted it, that people would feel better. And that assumption was wrong. People wanted to know that it was a government regulation. They felt better if they knew that we had to ask for this information. That made them feel safe. So it was a lot about the language and the time. And it was all about mocking up really quickly, doing quick and dirty prototypes of when and what kind of information to ask for. It even made a difference in terms of, were we giving them a playing field or were we giving them a choice? We just explored and explored and explored and lots of talking to people when we were bringing them in to our labs and not, this was pre-pandemic.
It's, I mean, you're bringing together a lot of the things that you talked about earlier, which is, again, the idea that IA is not just about navigation, that part of IA is this structure of time, right? The sort of the beats in this conversation that we're having. And it sounds like you're being very sensitive to the fact that as you're sort of building up this flow, as this flow is kind of building and progressing, that the relationship between whoever's on the other end and the user is the company and the user is strengthening or changing at least, right? And so being very cautious and deliberate about how we're designing this structure, which is based on time, not navigation, allows us to encourage the user to be more vulnerable, to sort of draw more out of the user. And so I can understand why Durell asks for flows a lot, because there's so much about flow in there.
One of my triggers with my team is if they just show me one screen. I want to know. It's like a huge trigger. So so where are they coming from? Where are they going? Are there actions on that screen? What are they going to do? How does it work? And all of that to me is information architecture.
So what I've been asking folks is, how do we help these designers who are new to the field, right? I created this deck of cards just as a way of kind of taking all of the experience that I've had and putting it down on, you know, small pieces of paper as I want to. But I still feel like there's an opportunity for us to help newer designers acclimate or think more deeply about information architecture. So what I've been asking folks is, how, if you were coaching someone on how to use the lens of vulnerability, what would you tell them? What advice would you give them?
That is a really good question. I would tell them that A, they might not be the user, so they should think about other people's emotions. I found designers, I don't really want to generalize, but I'm tired of seeing really small gray type that I can't see anymore. I would like them to consider functionality. Well, yeah, minor in my eyes. consider functionality and how it works should be paramount. And that other people might not feel the same way. I found it really, I would tell them to really do research around the subject, not necessarily the thing. So that's what I meant when I said I wanted to understand. We did generative research around how people felt about money. I want to know how people feel. So what makes them feel vulnerable about the issue that they're thinking about? You know, a long, long time ago, I worked at Yahoo Personals. And this is also an area where people, you know, one of our target women said to me in an interview, she's like, I pay money to get rejected. And, you know, like, that's a terrible thing. She was like, I'm 35 years old. I'm looking for a man who's 35 years old or so. And a 35-year-old man is looking for a 25-year-old woman. So I'm immediately rejected. And so I had to say, well, how do I make her feel better? How can I show her using the structure that she might actually match with somebody, you know, rather than feeling rejected? So I would tell, we tested a version where you could see your profile right next to your match's profile. So you could literally visualize what you had in common. And that was very successful. And I wasn't the designer, I was the manager. But again, it was testing and talking to people. And this was, how did they feel about relationships? How did they feel about, you know, what happened if they didn't meet somebody versus how did that structure actually work? So I would start big and funnel my way down to the question I needed. That's one advice I would give to people. And then, you know, everybody talks about empathy and I think that's all true. And just to remember that people are not all like you.
Well, that was awesome. I think we will leave it there. Thank you so much for joining me.
You're welcome so much.